You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. On the show today, we still have a big signing to discuss, and that is Justin Verlander is a New York Met. I did break it down in a rapid reaction podcast earlier on today, but let's really dive deep into this one in the first segment. I'm going to read off the resume a little bit. You know it, but I think it's still fun to really understand what the Mets are getting here. Then in the next segment, we'll go into what this means for the franchise, because I do think that by signing Verlander and Scherzer in back-to-back off-seasons, you're seeing a real culture change with this organization that is really instructed with how they'll continue to perform moving forward. Then we're going to close out the show today looking around the league. Trey Turner signs with the Mets' rival, the Phillies. What does that mean for how they might have to round out the Mets' offense to compete with that offensive juggernaut in Philadelphia next season? Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at justbaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, look, Justin Verlander has an unbelievable career. Guy won an MVP award all the way back in 2011. He is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-time All-Star, 3-time Cy Young winner, Rookie of the Year, had the pitching triple crown that he won, as well as an ALCS MVP on his resume, 2 ERA titles, and also 2 World Series championships with the Houston Astros. And since he went to Houston, 5 years, right, with this team, got traded in 2017, one of the seasons, 2020, only a single start. But still, 102 starts, a 2.26 ERA. Okay, let me say that again if you didn't quite grasp that. Over his last 102 regular season starts, this guy has pitched to a 2.26 ERA in 652 innings. Let's look at his last 3 full seasons. 2018, first full year in an Astros uniform. Goes out, makes 34 starts, pitches to a 2.52 ERA, goes 16-9, strikes out 290 batters in 214 innings pitched. The 290 strikeouts led the American League. He had the lowest whip in all of baseball. That's, of course, walks, hits, over innings pitched at 0.902. You look at his strikeout per nine of 12.2. That is absurd. You look at the difference between strikeouts and walks. His strikeout walk rate, 7.84 strikeouts to every walk. That was the best mark in all of baseball. The following season, in 2019, and mind you, he finished runner-up in the Cy Young voting that year. 2018, who won the award? It was Blake Snell took the Cy Young from Justin Verlander. But he goes and he follows up that season, wins 21 games in 2019, made again 34 starts, led all of baseball with 223 innings pitched, struck out 300 batters. I believe it was Garrett Cole was probably the only person who struck out more than him that year. Whip of 0.803 to lead all of baseball. The hits per nine, 5.5, led all of baseball. The strikeout to walk rate again led the American League at 7.14. He won his second Cy Young, got some MVP votes, was an All-Star. Just a remarkable season. 2020 makes one start, ends up getting hurt, needing Tommy John, misses all 2021, and he comes back this year, pitches to a 1.75 ERA, which I assume is a career best, and looking through it now, it is a career best. Led all of baseball with the 1.75 ERA, which, again, absolutely absurd. If you're looking at ERA and ERA plus, which ERA plus, very similar to WRC plus offensively, this is a stat that measures pitchers based on a league average of 100. His ERA plus for the season was 220. So doubly as effective and more so than your typical pitcher. 18-4 record. We don't usually care about records, but hey, you still like a guy that goes out and wins a bunch of games. 0.829 whip once again, leads all of baseball. So his last 3 years pitched with a Tommy John surgery sandwiched in the middle of it all, he has led all of baseball in not walking batters, not giving up hits. Kind of important when you're a pitcher. I mean, it's hard not to get excited when you look at that resume. And also, you have a guy that's sitting on 244 wins in his career that has spoken about wanting to get to 300. And where did he decide to go to get more wins? He probably could have pitched for the Dodgers. Would he have gotten 86.66, whatever it is, million dollars, 86.67? No, maybe he gets 80. Who knows? Who knows how much the Mets maybe outbid the field in this one? Maybe the difference was that conditional third year, the vesting option, or if he hits the, was it 140 innings pitched in 2024, he gets the $35 million player option. Which, honestly, if you're the Mets, isn't even scary because, again, either he picks it up and he's been awesome for 2 years, he's awesome for 2 years and he decides to opt out and either sign a new deal with you or sign elsewhere, or he gets hurt, doesn't get the option, or I guess the final one is he doesn't, you know, perform the way you would expect and he ends up, you know, qualifying for that option. But then again, if he's fallen off a cliff, the Mets could always manipulate the innings if they had to. So the bottom line here is, look, this was a great contract. This is a great pitcher. It is less risk than Jacob DeGrom because it's 2 years compared to five. And I mean, the bottom line of the results from his last three full seasons, it's a guy that has gone out and has given up less hits, less walks than anyone, has kept his ERA, you know, this year was 1.75. The 2 years prior to that, it was, you know, in the 2.5s. He's remarkable. He is a remarkable pitcher who still had velo this year, still showed that he had the good stuff. There's no reason to think that he's going to trend down other than the fact that Father Time is undefeated. He's going to be 40. But the guy just got a new elbow coming off the Tommy John, and as long as he looks good in the first half of the season and we're not seeing some case of he burned all the bullets in his first year back from TJ, you know, I think you're going to feel pretty good about this signing as you watch Scherzer and DeGrom go back and forth all year long as maybe the best 1-2 punch in baseball. Certainly better than Jacob DeGrom and John Gray. Not to fire a shot that way, but hey, came to mind. So we're going to discuss next here the impact of a Verlander on this franchise and really how signing a guy like this continues to move the Mets past their previous reputation and into a more well-respected one around the league. Before we get to that, though, today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer and esports. They've got it all at BetOnline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you can find those at BetOnline as well. BetOnline is always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. For the last couple weeks, I've been telling you about the future odds on a Justin Verlander. Not the Astros. Where would he sign? Plus 375 is the number I was telling you to bet on Verlander to lay with the Mets. If anyone did, you just cashed in on some nice money there. Check out BetOnline for the other free agents that are available, like a Carlos Correa. Trey Turner just signed. He's off the board, but there's still a few more you can grab. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. Bet online, where the game starts. So, Justin Verlander is a New York Met. Max Scherzer is a New York Met. Francisco Lindor is a New York Met. Lindor is now on this team for still 9 more years. So you have this shortstop solidified. And as we're seeing, a Trey Turner at 30 get an 11-year deal. You have to think back to the Lindor contract and think, well, you know, Francisco Lindor doesn't have a game as predicated on speed as Trey Turner. He's a way better defensive shortstop. Would I pay, you know, an extra $31 million, even though I'm getting one last year on him? I think so. I think so. With Francisco Lindor in place, with Edwin Diaz, the best closer in baseball in place, and now two surefire first ballot Hall of Famers atop the rotation, the Mets are a legitimate contender for at least the next 2 years. And the idea behind making these signings is to win now on a high payroll and to start to build sustainable methods of winning in the pipeline. That's why you see the certain hires bring in these specialists from other teams to build up player development and scouting. And the idea is you will get to that point where this franchise will be a lot more self-sufficient and won't have to rely on other teams' talent through free agency and trades to accent their roster and try to win. But with that, you also have the narrative that surrounds a team. And for the longest time, the narrative around the Mets has just been that they are a laughingstock. It's the LOL Mets. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. Just wait till the Mets. All that garbage. But that garbage could be a self-fulfilling prophecy for a franchise. And who knows? Maybe we saw a little bit of that at the end of this season. Maybe they're still trying to get a little bit more of that stink out because it was just so many years of it. So I mention all of this because at a certain point, that has to change. There has to be things that will adjust and move your franchise from mediocrity to a sustained, bona fide, great winning franchise that has that respect that you will continue to win. And Steve Cohen's doing that. I mean, Steve Cohen is taking this franchise and he is showing that he is dead set on making sure that the New York Mets are a team that fans can be proud to root for. That's what he's done. And he's building great relationships with these players. One of the big things that was different in the Jacob DeGrom negotiations and the Justin Verlander negotiations is the fact that Jacob DeGrom didn't really want to speak with a Steve Cohen, where Verlander was very open and then thrilled with what he heard from Steve Cohen and thrilled with the environment and that commitment from the owner to win, which Max Scherzer cited a year ago, echoing very similar sentiments. These guys want to win. They're not just coming to the Mets for the bag. Obviously, the bag get you in the door, get you in the room. But Justin Verlander is not going to sign on just for the money alone and spend the last couple years of his career on a team that he wants no part of, a franchise that he doesn't respect. These are all things that are good signs for the future. And I'll tell you what, I hate as a New York Giants football fan who has had plenty of Patriots fans in my life, I hate to give that franchise credit, but of course, the Patriots have been the model franchise in the NFL for a long time, and yeah, they're not going through their best stretch currently. But what I will say is Robert Kraft has developed that reputation where he's a player's owner, and a lot of really good NFL players have loved to play for the Patriots because of that man atop it all. And he has taken a franchise that used to be a type of a laughingstock into the, you know, preeminent top franchise in football, maybe, right? Steve Cohen, I could see having a very similar career arc to Robert Kraft, where you take this team and you invest significantly into them and you build up everything around it, everything around the stadium and all that. And you build your franchise into an absolute cash cow that continues to win, 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 win. And with those wins, that just breeds future success because guys who are free agents say, you know what? Yeah, I'd like to go sign with a winner in the New York Mets. I think they're getting there. I think that this signing is a big step towards that because, look, again, I already mentioned, Justin Verlander wants to win 300 games in his career. Now, he's a long way off still, you know, 50-plus wins. But he wants to go to a team where he thinks he can win 20 games. I can guarantee you that. And so he had a lot of opportunities. He could have taken less money likely and returned to a team that has helped him win a lot of games with the Houston Astros. He could have gone to the Dodgers, the team that just won more games than anyone, and probably gotten somewhat comparable money. He chose the Mets. He thinks that he can win with the New York Mets. And also, I just listened to his brother Ben Verlander's podcast. Apparently, part of the pitch was the Mets aren't done, which I think is a little bit obvious knowing this owner and the needs that are still out there. But it's still good to hear. So, Verlander, you could actually say the second big piece because Diaz was already signed, but that almost felt like an extension more than a free agent signing because it's just always seemed like it was inevitable. This is that first huge, okay, we're in the offseason, the Mets are making moves, and I remember how much fun we had last year when it was Marte, you know, was it Escobar? I think it was actually Canna, Escobar, Marte. I think that was the order. Then it was Scherzer. Now we're starting with Scherzer. So if from the same logic goes up, did you get Carlos Correa or Aaron Judge next? Probably not, but you never know. We will next go through what is left here for the Mets to do, but also really spend a lot of time on Trey Turner because he is a Philadelphia Philly, which means that team that just went to the World Series got better. This division is going to be great. So the Mets got to make sure that they keep pace with them and land at least one more, if not two more bats to really take this lineup over the top because that Phillies lineup is scary. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But first, another word from our sponsors. Trey Turner signs an 11-year, $300 million contract. You look at the starting nine for the Phillies, and it's pretty dang good. You got Kyle Schwarber. You got Trey Turner. You got JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper. That's most likely your first four. You got Rhys Hoskins for, I think, one more year. Nick Castellanos can't be worse than he was. You got Alec Bohm. You got Bryson Stott over at second base now. So the defense that was solid at short will be great at second. And he really started to get better at bats throughout the season. Alec Bohm also did show some stuff in the playoffs. I felt the defense started to get a little bit better at third base. He had some clutch hits. He was definitely giving better at bats than Castellanos. So, I mean, you look at that team and then you throw in Brandon Marsh, a defensive first center fielder that they picked up at the deadline, but has shown a little bit more offensively since going to the Phils. It's a much better team defensively to have Trey Turner, Bryson Stott, and Brandon Marsh out the middle compared to where they started last season with Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius, and Odubel Herrera. That is an incredible improvement for their team. To add a Turner into an offense that just went to the World Series, that's dangerous and also gives them an element of speed they didn't really have. I mean, Gene Segura could swipe the occasional bag, but he's not stealing 30 or 40 like Turner can on a given season. He's the best base dealer in baseball throughout his career. JT Realmuto, he brings you a little bit of everything. Bryce Harper is an absolute superstar. You got one of the best home run hitters in baseball in Kyle Schwarber. And look, you know, Hoskins and Castellanos, I would bet that at least one of them is going to give you a good year. They're both kind of hit or miss. but one of them is likely to be good next year, and all those younger guys are solid as well. So the Phillies are a good team, and they still have Wheeler and Nola, so they still have that front of the rotation. Suarez showed a lot in the playoffs too. They're going to be competitive. The Braves have a core locked up. The Mets have to continue to improve, and I think when you look at their lineup this year, so much hinges on Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty being good. I think Eduardo Escobar is a really nice fallback option at third base, where he maybe even starts the season, but you imagine Brady's going to grab Brady. Brady? I guess I was still on the Patriots bandwagon there. Or maybe I just combined Brett and Beatty. you would imagine Beatty would grab that starting job at some point, if not by opening day. But there's no guarantee they're going to perform. And so you know what you're going to get from McNeil, Lindor, and Alonso. You have a pretty good idea what you're going to get from Marte and Canna out in the outfield. But you have to replace Brandon Nimmo. And I do wonder, when you see the lineup that the Phillies are going to put out there, the Braves are going to put out there, knowing that you have an Alvarez who probably could use some time at DH, knowing you also have a Mark Vientos who has a chance to grab some DH at-bats. But then you have Daniel Vogelbach, who is this not very malleable piece, a DH only, who is station to station as a runner. So even though he walks a lot, those walks just, it's like two-thirds of a normal walk, you know, because it takes so much longer to get him around the bases. You almost have to pair him with a Terrence Gore, you know, if you're talking about meaningful baseball late in the season. So as much as I think Vogie is a really, really nice floor option for this team, like it's a nice, all right, if nothing else, great backup plan at $1.5 million. Of course, you hold on to that. I do think that it would be nice to be able to replace a Vogelbach with like a Michael Brantley, where now you have a legitimate, really great all-around hitter who can play a left field in a pinch. That gives you a little more roster flexibility. And then replacing Nimmo, you know, I wouldn't say Brantley is the Nimmo replacement, but if you have him, it just makes it a little bit easier to plug in the Confortos, the Hanigers, whatever right fielder is on the market if you decide to go that way with Marte in center to replace him. There's still a chance the Mets re-sign Nimmo. And I'd be thrilled about Nimmo coming back for 2023. I'd be very concerned about Nimmo on a six-year deal at $24, $25 million per. And I think because the price might get to that point, I very much could see the Mets moving on here. And I also could see them striking a little bit early. Like I could see them making that move where you almost do what the Braves did last year with Freddie Freeman, where Freeman was still out there and negotiations were happening, and then they made the deal and they got Matt Olson. And then it was like, all right, well, you know Freeman's gone. I could see the Mets jumping on a signing or a trade that maybe we're not seeing right now and ending up in a place where, you know, that they already have that position filled. And Nimmo's kind of left to say, all right, you got to sign elsewhere. The last thing I'll say here, James McCann is getting some trade buzz right now, which is very interesting, that there's teams that want him. How much salary would the Mets have to eat to get a deal done is going to be the big question there. But the Cardinals apparently have some interest. The Rangers, there was some rumblings about the Grom when they signed him. Maybe they go get a James McCann. I don't know, but I think that the Cardinals thing is interesting because they got to replace Yadier Molina, and I could see them looking at McCann and thinking, all right, he could command our pitching staff. He could be a nice little leader for us. And even thinking that the offense would play up a little bit going to that division, the NL Central, which is favorable to bats. There's a couple of trade possibilities with McCann going to the Cardinals that are interesting. There's the more likely version, which is either just a straight salary dump where the Mets are eating some of the money and you get a, you know, player to be named later, a lottery ticket prospect back or something like that. There's the Steven Matz ends up back on the Mets anyway trade that I saw Mets Daddy on Twitter float out there that I think is kind of interesting. Hey, we'll take some of your bad money. You take some of ours. And after all that talk last offseason with the Mets being mad that Matz doesn't come back, here he would. end up back with the Mets. That's a fun one, just to add some depth to your rotation. I still think you'd have to go out and add a three-starter, though, so take that for what it is. What would be really fascinating, and if there is more buzz here, maybe we'll do a full podcast later this week to discuss possibilities, but I love it if the Mets, even if you had to give up a significant prospect, whether that be the Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricios of the world, whether it be a pitcher that you maybe didn't want to give up, if you could swing a deal with the Cardinals where you got off James McCann's money and you gave them prospects and you landed a Dylan Carlson, that would be amazing. And that could be your center fielder. Now, I don't know if they actually want to trade Carlson. I'd imagine they don't, but they do have a glut of outfielders. So even if it's a Lars Nootbaar bar, I mean, there is a chance that there could be a meeting with the Cardinals and the Mets where maybe the Mets could get an outfielder in a James McCann trade. Although, again, if they're getting one of those guys that's really, really good, you're probably having to throw more in. Tyler O'Neill also had a down year, so maybe you buy low on him. Regardless, though, all of that for another day. That's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. We will see what is left here with the winter meetings. More big news that could unfold. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On Sports Today, hosted by Peter Bukowski. Locked On Sports Today is where you want to go to stay up to date with everything going on in the sports world. You follow Locked On Sports Today on the Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get podcasts.